All right, welcome to this edition of the Football General Manager Podcast. My name is Aaron Thomas, otherwise known as Native Seahawk on Twitter. Today, we're going to be talking about a few things as this time of the year is really kind of quiet. So folks like me, we try to do the best we can to conjure up some really good ideas and angles to be able to talk about to kind of get us through this really slow time. There is no off training camp season activities, there's no OTAs, etc. All we can really do is just sort of sit back and, I guess, you know, watch baseball. And if you're here in the Pacific Northwest, watching baseball lately has not been that much fun. So until then, we start to talk about ways of, you know, trying to figure out what is happening around the NFL. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about that in the last 7 days since our last visit in the last podcast. And, you know, the first thing we want to talk about is the, you know, we're going to be talking a little bit more about the Arizona Cardinals and their team as we take a look at the NFC West next week in the podcast. I will be looking a little bit more closer to home and looking at the Los Angeles Rams. But this week, we're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals. But getting into the headlines, we have one of the interesting things that came out this week was that the defensive tackle Robert Nkemdiche was arrested and reportedly had a white powdery substance. And, you know, he was driving. The guy, first of all, why are NFL players driving? If they have the ability to get an Uber or even pay for a driver, why don't they just do that? I don't get that. Anyway, Nkemdiche was speeding. He was driving with a suspended license, and to top it off, the police found a white powdery substance in his car that was consistent with cocaine. And so, again, I don't get this. Nkemdiche, he did come into the league in 2016. He had a marijuana arrest prior to him being drafted by the Cardinals in the first round. And, you know, so of course, you have to wonder, is this going to be a trend? Are we going to see Nkemdiche doing more than just this? We'll find out. And again, as they're going through off-season stuff, this is what I was talking about last week that Pete Carroll was worried about, is are his players going to be able to get through this off-season without getting arrested, without having some really weird stuff happening that would affect the team? And if you're trying to go for a Super Bowl run, you don't want to have that. And I think this arrest for Nkemdiche is really going to play into some of the reasons why I don't think the Cardinals are going to do well this year, but we'll get into that a little bit later. In other news, Liz Matthews, one of our favorite writers, is saying that the Dwayne Brown was ranked number 8 tackle in the NFL by Touchdown Wire, which goes a little bit against what I was saying last week. I didn't think that Dwayne Brown as a left tackle in this league was a top 10 guy. I kept seeing some real inconsistencies last year, and now granted he did play injured for some of the season, but still I'm getting kind of worried about that position as we go forward. But according to Touchdown Wire, they name him a top 10 left tackle. They say he's got the agility, the speed, the brains to be able to pick up what the defenses are doing, especially the pass rusher that is trying to go around him to get to the quarterback. And so, again, I don't see that, but, you know, I'm not always 100% correct either. And so hopefully he'll play in a top 10 type of season this year. Well, hopefully he'll continue that and prove people like me wrong going into 2019. In other news, Tony Pauline is saying that this is talking about the NFL supplemental draft, which is coming up on July 10th this year. And the supplemental draft, for those of you that don't know, is basically talks about ineligible players that were not eligible to be drafted back in April for whatever reasons. They, you know, their grades, they had maybe had some legal issues going on, and players, the players themselves did not file paperwork to get into the April draft. And so the NFL says, okay, for those that weren't in the draft, they didn't file, we can go ahead and let them file for the July supplemental draft. And some really interesting players came out of the NFL supplemental draft since 1977. Only 45 total players, so it's not like a ton of players come out of the supplemental draft. But guys like Chris Carter came out in 1987, Bernie Kosar in 1985, and more recently Josh Gordon in 2012. And so this is interesting. Marcus Sims is a wide receiver out of West Virginia, and he was given a sixth grade draft grade. And, you know, some teams were like, well, you know, again, he wasn't in the April draft for some reasons. And, you know, folks had said that there was some character issues that was wrong with him. But, you know, some guys get a bad rap. You know, when Frank Clark came out into the draft and people were like, don't draft him because he's got character issues or he's got some legal issues going in. Sometimes the players really do their best to turn their life around. And so Marcus Sims is a pretty tall receiver. He's in the 6 feet range out of West Virginia. And, you know, over his the last couple of years had over 2,000 yards receiving. But, you know, we'll see if anybody takes a flyer. He's probably the most notable guy coming into this supplemental draft on July 10th. In other news, Liz Matthews says that the NFL is finalizing instant replay of pass interference rule for this season. You know, a lot of us traditionalists, you know, Pete Carroll is probably one of the ones that talks about, let's just get rid of instant replay altogether. Then there's some that just really, really is on the other side of Pete Carroll and says, you know what, that's BS. We want to use technology to make sure that every play is reviewed and that we can make sure that the best outcome comes out and that it's the most fair. I'm kind of in the middle. I don't think that we should get rid of instant replay. I think since the onset of it, it's really has been probably more beneficial than against. It takes a little bit more time, of course. That's probably the biggest downside to instant replay. And, you know, when there's things, and really what we're talking about here is what happened in that Saints playoff game and the clear and obvious pass interference that took place in that really pivotable game, and that basically sent the Rams to the Super Bowl. And, you know, I always believe that one play does not equal the outcome of the entire game. Even if it was the final play of the game, there was a lot of opportunity for both teams to be able to really squash each other. Instead, they allowed the other team to either come back or basically score on them. And so I don't think that one play constitutes a rule change, in my opinion. Now, of course, if there's a tremendous trend in the NFL and you start seeing all these pass interference rule or calls not, you know, having a no call in them, then of course we want to make sure that we are protecting the game and protecting the integrity of the game. And so I think Sean Payton and the group there in New Orleans have been really pounding the drum and really making sure that the other NFL owners know that they were wronged, that there should have been a pass interference, at least a replay on that, and then for the refs to actually go back and unblow what they blew. I mean, those refs, they did blow it. It was clear and present, you know, that, and clear and obvious that we saw that pass interference, and unfortunately it wasn't called. But anyway, I know that in listening to John Clayton this week, he's totally against pass interference replays. I am too. I think that this is going to be one of the things, like, you know, what your clear and obvious pass interference could be something that another man or another person, another female, and their version of the clear and obvious. So really it's like taking that, you know, what color is that piece of artwork on the wall? Is that blue or is it sky blue? Who's right? Who's wrong? And so I'm really concerned about this. And I think, like what John Clayton said this week, he didn't think that this was going to fly. He thinks that by week four of the preseason, there's going to be so many pass interference calls that the NFL owners and everybody's going to, you know, basically tell each other, let's scrap it. because it's just taking too long. There's too many penalties, you know, and again, it follows the challenge rule. So again, it's not like every single play can be challenged. It's just going to be, you know, the normal two challenges per half. And if they, you know, get it wrong, they're going to be forced to take a timeout, et cetera. So hopefully as we go along that the NFL will get this right and the pass interference penalties will continue to stay within the referees and not with instant replay. So we'll see how that goes. In other news, Liz Matthews says that Bradley McDougald has high praise for the Seahawks rookie safeties. That's pretty big. I mean, again, we're talking about preseason. We're talking about without the pads, you know, in July, mid to late July, there'll be the very first training camp, and we'll really get a chance to see how these guys are playing with being able to have some kind of contact. But according to Bradley McDougald, he's talking about, you know, some of the guys, you know, Ugo Amadi. You know, he was one of the first guys that comes to mind with our safeties, and so does Marcus Blair. And, you know, he knew about them. He did his homework, Bradley McDougal did. He could understand, you know, what kind of guys they were. And according to McDougal, you know, one of the things that was said about Amadi was that he was too small. He was too short. He was too light. And according to McDougal, he thinks, yeah, he is kind of on the shorter side, but he's got tremendous athletic ability. He's got tremendous speed. And I bet you that what I'm thinking is that if Amadi bulks up, he can actually be a pretty good, you know, tackler in the NFL. You know, and if you joined me last week, I did my first forecast for this roster, and I have Amadi making it. I don't have him going to the practice squad. I don't have him being cut. I have him right now. The Seahawks have him as their fourth on the depth chart. I think he's going to be second on the depth chart behind TT, Tedrick Thompson. So, and then with Marcus Blair, you know, according to McDougal, he was like, yeah, we knew that there was some kind of issues with him and with Blair, that, you know, people were saying he had character issues and wasn't a good teammate. But he goes, from whatever I've seen and how I've interacted with him, he's been really, really coachable. He's listening to the coaches. He's listening to me. And that's big. I think Marcus Blair is probably going to be one of the most my dark horse favorite for this draft. I think people kind of, you know, just because Earl Thomas is gone and we don't have an all-star free safety like we've had in the past, I think Blair has the opportunity to become another harder-hitting safety than was Earl Thomas. And Earl, you know, if you ever watch him play, you know, he was just the quickest free safety that we've ever had in on our team. You know, not to shed again any light against or throw shade against Kenny Easley, but, you know, when you have a guy like Earl Thomas who can go from one side of the field to the other in like 2.1 seconds, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, he was that quick. And he did the best he could to try to hit it really hard. I think Blair has the capability to match what Earl Thomas did, plus include that hard hit at the very end, which Earl kind of did his freshman year, his first year here with Seattle. But I think that it's going to be interesting. I think that when you have, you know, senior guys like McDougal, who I've got a ton of respect for, saying that he likes what he's seeing. I mean, really, what is he going to say? I don't like what I've seen. I think these two guys, I think we're screwed, you know, for the future. He's not going to say that. But I think that, and when you look at this makeup of this team, we're going to need the veterans to come in and really, you know, mentor these young guys as we've turned the page on some really key parts of this team. So we'll see. I have a really good feeling that both Blair, Marcus Blair, and Ugo are going to be really, really good safeties and cornerbacks in this league. In other news, Matty Brown did a really good job this week to take a look at the Seahawks tight end, Jacob Hollister, who I've got again. And last week I pointed out that I think Jacob Hollister makes the team and instead Nick Vannette is gone. I think he either gets traded or cut this year. I think, Jacob Hollister provides, a lot more than what we've seen from Vannette. And Matty Brown describes it. If you ever follow him on Twitter, take a look at it. Basically, he's saying that Josh McDaniels in New England did a really good job of looking for ways to get Hollister in mismatches with linebackers. And when they did that, Hollister's touches in the slot reflect that. His speed and physicality gets behind underneath zones. He alters his routes to nestle in holes, and his hands are plus-plus. So, again, I really liked Nick Vannett when we got him in the third round in the draft. But again, we haven't seen too much of him, and he had some injuries over this last couple years. And even when he was in there, he kind of was forgotten. And if what Matty Brown is suggesting, that Hollister can get behind and underneath zones, that's huge. Because I think that he's a bigger dude. I can't remember what his size is right now, but Hollister can really play, and if he's got the hands for it. I do believe that Matty Brown talks about the way that Hollister can actually block as well on the end, which is another good thing that you need to have in this offense. And so we'll be looking for more great information coming out of camp in July for Jacob Hollister. Keep an eye on him this summer. In other news, the NFL Draft Diamonds took a look at and actually posted some quotes that wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. said recently in an interview. And they're trying to make some, I think it's kind of some clickbait. They were trying to say that ODB took a shot at the Giants. And when I read the quotes, he was basically saying that he didn't feel like he was going to be able to expand himself physically and spiritually and mentally over there in New York, and that basically the team was keeping him from growing as a person, of being more comprehensive as a human being. And I know that's kind of taking a shot. I mean, he didn't really give examples as to why they were allegedly holding him back from being this even better person. But I don't know. Reason why I wanted to talk about that really is, again, as a general manager, you try to figure out what kind of guys are on your team. What's the makeup around the locker room? Are there going to be guys like ODB, who I think has got tremendous talent, but is not a very good character guy in the locker room? If you're going to be sitting there basically, shoving the responsibility against your former organization for you not growing as a human being, I think there's some problems with that. I really do. I think that you're going to have to, again, as you draft guys and even when you draft a guy, it doesn't mean that they're going to be 100% a good character guy. I mean, Tyler Lockett, who we're going to talk about in a few minutes, is probably the best, example when I talk about character guys. I remember when he first came out into the league, everything was yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir. Any type of question that was being asked to him by females, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. I mean, he really had that Southern hospitality, that feel to him, that, man, this guy is really just excited to be here and is respectful to people that talk to him. And then you got on the flip side of that is, Beckham, who, again, I think is, I think the world of him on the field. But you get him in the locker room, how's he going to be when the Browns start out, 1-5 on the season? Is he going to be throwing his quarterback under the bus? Is he going to be saying the Browns are the reason why they're 1-5? And maybe it's not because he's not doing his part on the field. We'll see. We'll definitely see. But again, that's coming out of Browns camp, and I am excited for the Browns. I think the Browns have a really good potential to be a really good team. I think that I don't think it's going to be this year. I think they're going to win 8 games, which is more than they won last year at 7. But, we'll see. I like the Browns. They're fun to watch and to kind of take a look at. In other news, Seahawks United tweeted out this week that on June 4th, which was not too long ago, that the NFL awarded the 28th franchise to Seattle. And I know that should have been on last week's or a couple of weeks ago's podcast, because that's not really headlines. But I just talk about, think about how this team has, really been, 1976 was the year that they started. That was the year I was born. So it's been about 43 years that they've been in the league. And, I'm just thankful for them. I love the fact that the Seahawks and the city of Seattle was awarded an NFL team. And you take a look at, the fact that hockey's coming to Seattle. you take a look at baseball, is kind of, you know, they're trying to renovate and reinvigorate baseball in Seattle with all these moves that they're making, you know, dumping Encarnacion's contract and, you know, getting some young guys like Vogie that's, you know, really making it fun to watch the team. You know, when is basketball coming back to Seattle? I think that's another thing that I'm not a big NBA fan because basketball's gone in Seattle. It doesn't feel like there's any relevancy for me to really care whether or not Portland goes very far in the playoffs or anything. So hopefully one day Seattle will be awarded a team. I think a lot of people don't think that's going to be the case, that basketball is ever coming back to Seattle. In other news, Pro Football Focus is basically talking about Tyler Lockett. And again, I think we all know that Tyler Lockett's going to be the number one guy in Seattle this coming year. And if he stays healthy, we'll have a really tremendous year. Pro Football Focus is saying that he was remarkably efficient, criminally underutilized, end quote. And some of the data that supports that is the fact that Lockett, in all of the years of Pro Football Focus, since they've been in business since 2006, Lockett ranked first in passer rating at 158 passer rating. He ranked first in receiving yards per target at 15. He was the only pass catcher to record a perfect passer rating when targeted and averaged more than 15 yards per target. And he also did get 11 yards per target. When he was covered, he got 11 yards. So he was a really good receiver even when he was covered. And his passer rating was at 128. So again, these are some really, really good statistics to prove that Tyler Lockett's going to be one to reckon with in 2019 if they continue to, you know, use him. And that's what Pro Football Focus is saying, is that, you know, but if you think about it, Doug Baldwin was their number one guy last year. And you know he'd be beefing if he didn't get the targets. And so Russell probably felt compelled that he had to throw to Doug Baldwin maybe more than he needed to. And I'm not saying that to disrespect it, but now you got Doug Baldwin gone. And now you got Tyler Lockett just sitting there by himself going, oh, yep, I'm still here. And, you know, the way that they're going to use Tyler Lockett, people keep saying they're going to kind of use him like Percy Harvin when he first came to Seattle, you know, moving him around and giving the jet sweeps. And so he can, you know, not only just catch the ball, but also run with it. And so we'll see. I think that at the end of the day, Tyler Lockett is going to be one of the guys that will be utilized as much as possible. I don't think he's going to be the slot receiver. I don't think that's where his strength is. I think you can see someone like Jacob Hollister taking and also Will Disley taking a lot of the targets that would have went to Doug Baldwin. And instead, they're going to use their tight ends a lot more, which makes a really good sense if you're talking about being a really good run first team, where you can have these setups where you have the tight ends. You can have Disley and Hollister, or Dixon and Hollister on the offensive line. You know, I mean, it looks like they're in a jumbo package and they're going to, you know, give the ball to Chris Carson, but instead it's play action fake. It's, you know, hit Hollister in the seam. It's hit, Disley in the seam and get that 5 to 7 yards. And then, you know, bam, the next one, 15, 20 yards down the field, he hit Tyler Lockett. And I think that's kind of the way we're going to see Seattle continue to use Tyler. I don't think they may add the jet sweep thing a little bit more. I think a lot of us want the Seahawks to get rid of the whole wide receiver screen play that they tried to do these last 2 or 3 years that never seems to work, where the receiver just kind of skips out like 2 or 3 steps, like, you know, like a basketball player, how they kind of go from right to left and they're just waiting for the ball to get thrown to them. And then there's blockers in front of them. That's the wide receiver screen. And how many times has that worked for Seattle? Like, was that very consistent? Heck no, it wasn't. They'd get 2 yards. They'd get back to the line of scrimmage. They weren't very good at that over the years. So hopefully they'll get rid of the wide receiver screen starting this year. In other news, John Schorsch is tweeting out from Pro Football Talk, NBCSports.com that former Seahawks quarterback Trevon Boykin was arrested this week for allegedly breaking and hitting his girlfriend's jaw. And he was bailed out on Friday, this last Friday. But God, talk about a player that's just completely went downhill. You know, a lot of us love Boykin. Again, as I pointed out last week, you never want to know who your backup quarterback is. You never want to know who they are because the starting quarterback is, you know, still playing and he's doing well. And, but to have, you know, Boykin, we all kind of liked him because he did kind of have that Russell Wilson feel to him, and he was taller than Russell, and he kind of looked like a more of a prototypical quarterback who had speed, and he had some accuracy issues, you know, probably 15 plus yards down the field, but be, you know, below 15 yards, he was pretty good. He had that bullet that would get through the defense and into the wide receiver's hands. And so, and then of course his running ability, being able to rush the ball. And so it's been tough to see Boykin and young guys like this that had the shot in the NFL. Seattle, when he was on the team back in 2018 and he was arrested for this, for something like this, Seattle dropped him. And throughout the course of last year and this offseason, nobody has picked up Boykin for good reason. I mean, if you're going to have a red flag like this and continue to kind of spiral, you're not going to find yourself on any team. You're probably going to be, you know, maybe in the XFL or any other, you know, CFL, any other, you know, leagues that are out there might be, you know, looking for you. But and that's really bad news to hear about Trevon Boykin being arrested. And hopefully he seeks some help and gets the legal help that he needs and mental health help. And that, you know, we don't need any more of this where men are hitting on women, like beating them up. Yeah, we need to protect our women. We need to make sure that, you know, especially with Native American women, you know, the missing and murdered Indigenous women that's happening, this movement where, you know, women in general, but especially Native American women are being targeted and they're being abducted. And so to have someone like Trevon Boykin do this or allegedly do this and breaking his girlfriend's jaw is just not good news at all. All right, we're going to switch gears now. We're going to take a closer look into the NFC West, as that's always the goal for the Seahawks, is not just to get to the Super Bowl and win it, but they always talk about that's win the NFC West. That's our first goal, our first step. We can control our destiny a little bit better if we win the NFC West. We most likely would get a first round home game, which is what you want. And so the first team I wanted to look at was the Arizona Cardinals, mostly because the Seahawks and the Cardinals, they always play these really tough games. I don't care how good Seattle is and how bad the Cardinals have been. For some reason, you know, how many times did we tie with the Cardinals in the last 2 or 3 years? It's crazy. And a lot of this is because of what's happening right now and what's happened in free agency and drafts. The teams all draft to each other's weaknesses and trying to make sure that they level it out a little bit more. And so when we talk about this year's Arizona Cardinals team, you know, Seattle's in a really good cap space. They're $25-plus million left, whereas Arizona's down to $6.3 million of current cap space. And a lot of that is because of what they did in free agency. A little bit of that was because of free agency. Their big hit was to their cap was a linebacker, Jordan Hicks, who was with the Philadelphia Eagles, signed a 4-year deal for $34 million this offseason. And looking at his film and tape, Hicks is pretty legit. Did he warrant a 4-year, $34 million deal? I don't think so. But again, we'll see how he translates into the Arizona Cardinal defensive scheme. And they also signed Terrell Suggs, who we know and love. And I think Suggs is a really good player. He's probably down to his last year. He signed a 1-year deal for $7 million. And again, Terrell Suggs played in Arizona and in college. And so he gets to kind of go home and play for folks that got to really appreciate him in the NCAAs. J.R. Sweezy's over there, guard. They signed him to a 2-year, $9 million deal, which, when healthy, J.R. Sweezy is a legitimate guard and can provide some really good run blocking. And his pass protection's kind of suspect. Of course, they got Kyler Murray, the number one draft pick overall. And a lot of this season is going to be, of course, down to the quarterback. Even when Russell Wilson was in the a rookie in his 2012 year, you know, a lot of people are like, oh man, they got a rookie quarterback. Nobody knows who he is. He's too short to play in the NFL. You know, a lot of pundits had Seattle winning six games, and nobody had them going to the playoffs and basically, you know, almost beating Atlanta in Atlanta to advance to the NFC Championship game. Nobody had him doing that. So, and a lot of that team was because of Russell Wilson. And can Kyler Murray, of course, whoever a lot of people are dubbing is like a Russell Wilson part two, can he really take this team far? I'm going to say no. And a lot of that is just because there's just so much change. I think when Russell Wilson came into the league, there was a little bit more consistency in Seattle because the general manager, John Schneider, and Pete Carroll had been together since the 2010 season. So they had a few years to, you know, find their big quarterback that they wanted to, you know, get behind. And unfortunately for Kyler Murray, he's coming into a situation where you have some legitimate, really good veterans on this team. Chandler Jones is in his seventh season, or he's got seven accrued seasons, so he's in his eighth season. He's their number one cap guy at $19.5 million for this year. Then you got Patrick Peterson, who himself has got some interesting legal issues going on with the NFL and may get suspended for a few games, but his cap hits at $11.8 million. He's in his ninth season. Of course, Larry Fitzgerald, who is the godfather of the NFL, I think, you know, he's, I got to meet Larry Fitzgerald one time at the one of Richard Sherman's fundraising dinners. He was there and just an amazing man. He's just a really good hearted dude. And I wish nothing but the best for Larry Fitzgerald. And so can he mentor Kyler Murray? Can he be able to share with him his work ethic and all the things that it takes to be have longevity in the NFL? I think he can. I think that's probably going to help speed Kyler Murray's, up a little bit, his education around the NFL and the speed and all the accuracy things he needs to have. But we'll see. David Johnson is still on this team. Again, he has had some injury concerns over the last two or three years. But when he's not injured, he's a legitimate running back. And he counts at $9.7 million against their cap this year. And so you take a look at all these guys, and again, we've talked about Ndamukong's arrest this week, and you know, how does this all play into the NFC West? Can they match up against the Seahawks and the Rams to have any kind of viable, you know, season this year? You know, and I think if they were an 8-8 team this year, I think people would be really happy with that because they'd be trending up. They wouldn't be the number one team picking in the 2019-20 draft. Instead, they'll be, you know, in the, you know, top 10 or 10 to 15 range. And so, unfortunately, though, I have Arizona at four wins this year. I think that they'll be top, you know, picking again the top three or top five in next year's draft. And a lot of this, again, is because there's just so much transition. I think that, unfortunately, some of their older guys are getting older. We talked about that already. And some of the guys are leaning on, you know, can David Johnson really sustain a healthy season this year? Will J.R. Sweezy, who they're looking to have their, guard play do really well this year, can he stay healthy? I'm going to say no on both of those things. I think that J.R. Sweezy especially is really on his last leg, literally, pun intended. And Terrell Suggs, I mean, the guy is going home and it's kind of his last season. I don't think he's a Ray Lewis kind of guy. I don't think he's going to come in and get reinvigorated and do really well for him. So, yeah, I got Arizona at four wins, 4-12 this season. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. All right, our final segment today, I had a really good chance to sit down with a local fan group, the Whatcom Seahawkers. I became a full-fledged member this week, and I wanted to get a little bit better feel for NFL fandom around Whatcom County, which is up here in Bellingham, in Ferndale area. I'm a tribal member from Lummi Nation, and so I wanted to see what was happening with our local fandom. I got to sit down with the president of the Whatcom Seahawkers, Elena Eden, right now. All right, we are here at the Whatcom Seahawkers Booster Club meeting, and I'm joined with me the president of the Whatcom Seahawkers, Elena Eden.
Yes.
Eden. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. I am now a member, a full-fledged member. And why are you, as the president of the Whatcom Seahawkers, what brings you joy, or why did you start or wanted to step up and be a leader in this club?
Because there was no fan club here in Whatcom County, and we wanted to start that, get all the 12s together and volunteer and help charities in the community, and that's why we started it.
So it's not only just the fan and the love of the game that the folks that go to these chapters, it's also the love of community, and it's a social club. And I was listening to some of the, how many members roughly do we have?
We have about 78 members at this time.
And so, what is it that the members do throughout the year? Is it just through the football season? Is it an off season?
Oh, no. We run year round. We're Seahawks all the time, 24/7. That's what we do.
And is there more than just the Whatcom County Seahawkers?
Yeah, we have chapters in Mexico, Germany, France, Las Vegas. We've got chapters in Boise. They're all over the world.
Yeah, and so I mean that just totally speaks to the volume of how many fans love the Seahawks, and they're not just here in the Seattle area, but they're all over the world. What brings the fandom in your mind? Why do they keep coming back?
Boy, that's a good question. I think everybody just wants to be part of the 12 family. That's what it is. It's just this giant family, and we just do things as 12s in the community, and we just love to do everything together as 12s. I mean, that's what we do.
So let's talk about the Seahawks real quickly. Last week, I talked about my predictions of the roster, who was going to make it and who wasn't going to make it. What is your overall assessment of the John Schneider? I call him Transaction John. That's my nickname for him. What is your overall thoughts on the Seahawks so far?
Oh, man, I think this group of rookies is probably one of the best we've ever had, and I'm excited to see what the new season does.
Yeah, I mean, then we got some good, free agents came through, Ziggy Ansah and Al Woods. Based on everything that you're seeing so far without having looked at training camp or any of the preseason games, what do you think, win-loss record do you think so far?
Oh, I think we're going to beat what everybody thinks. I mean, I think it's going to be an awesome season. I can't predict what it's going to be, but I think it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I find myself trying not to predict, although the last 2 years I've got it right. I thought, I said 10 wins last year. Everybody looked at me like I was nuts, like no way, all this turnover and, Sherman's gone, et cetera, that we're only going to get 8 wins, and then we got to the playoffs. So what are you most excited about for this season? I mean, what part of the game, what player, what drives you to like, man, I just can't wait for that?
It's going to be all the new tools that Russell gets to use. It's going to be DK. I mean, if Will Disley comes back, that's going to be a big factor. Just all the new players that Russell's going to have an option to throw to or hand off to is what's going to be really good.
Well, awesome. I'm really stoked about that, too. Everything. I can't wait to go to training camp. I'm actually going to be going. I'm actually giving away a ticket to a training camp this year. And they have to listen to the podcast and figure out how to win. But I want to thank you for welcoming me into this chapter. And for anybody that's in Whatcom County, how can they get a hold of us to sign up to be a fan or a member of this?
Well, one of the best ways is just to come to a meeting. We meet at Roundtable Pizza every third Friday of the month at 7 o'clock. And that's the best way to find us. We're always here, and it's a good time.
Yeah, so that's Roundtable Pizza, Sunset Square in Bellingham. And that is going to be August 9th at 7 p.m. So mark your calendars down. Come on over. sign up, be a part of this great family here in the Whatcom Seahawkers Booster Club right here in Whatcom County. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, go Hawks.
Go Hawks. All right, thank you so much for joining me, Elena Eden. I really appreciate going to the last Whatcom Seahawkers meeting and being able to listen to all the great things that that group is doing. And I can't wait to be a part of it going forward. And so next week, we're going to be talking about how you can win your chance to sit with me and go with me to the Seahawks training camp. I was able to get two tickets to four training camp sessions this year. And, you know, if you win and you have to listen to win, I'll be putting the rules out on my Twitter account, the Football General Manager Twitter account, the Facebook page as well, and also within this podcast to figure out who's going to come with me. We'll go to the training camp. We'll talk about who we liked and what maybe some guys that stood out to us as we were sitting there on the berm watching the players, and you know, maybe do some interviews with other Seahawks fans that are out there. And that's where I get to learn and get to meet so many other Seahawks fans, is at training camp. So I want to take one listener with me four times this year. So we'll see how that goes. And thanks again so much for listening, and go Hawks.